Welcome to this podcast on tardive dyskinesia. Tardive dyskinesia is a neurologic disorder characterized by involuntary movement and commonly associated with exposure to antipsychotic medication. I will be talking to Dr. Alejandro Alva, a Pacific neuropsychiatric specialist in Orange County, California, and Linda Tran, a nurse practitioner at Progeny Psychiatric Clinics in Orange County, California. They will discuss the burden of tardive dyskinesia and the diagnostic approach. Dr. Alva, in your experience, what is the impact of tardive dyskinesia on patients' quality of life?
It has multiple aspects that we have to look at, right? It has a physical impact. Obviously, tardive dyskinesia, it's a disfiguring disease. And, you know, it's inflicted upon the patient by the use of certain medications. But you have to realize that when the patient is grimacing or tongue thrusting or having involuntary movements, that actually creates a sense of physical discomfort and a sense of psychological discomfort as well. It also has, as you can well imagine, a social impact because patients tend to isolate. They feel uncomfortable presenting themselves in public. Even with simple things like family affairs, they feel like they should not be there. And they tend to isolate. And this leads us to the next point, which is, you know, it has a psychological impact or a psychiatric impact on the patient where they can develop depression, where they can develop anxiety, where they can develop panic, as a matter of fact. And then it does have an impact on their overall health. They can develop problems with muscle wasting because of this significant movements. They can have dental issues because of grinding their teeth. So in general, this is a multifactorial impact that patients suffer from having this particular disease entity.
Nurse Practitioner Tran, what is your approach to screening for tardive dyskinesia?
So I usually try to screen for TD on every visit that I see the patient in person or by video. You can start the screening even from the moment that you're walking them in from the lobby into your office. As they're getting seated in a more comfortable stance. I'll also potentially ask the patient and activate them either from a cognitive standpoint or a physical standpoint, just to see if I see any movements. And if there are any movements or any questions about movements, at that point, we can further have a formal assessment with an AIMS scale following. But ultimately, as a good rule of thumb, I always teach my students, if you see an antipsychotic medication or a dopamine blocking agent on the medication list, you definitely want to make sure that there's an AIMS score in the patient's chart annually, if not twice a year, depending on the patient's risk factors. So if a patient's walking into your office, oftentimes you can look for a swinging of the arms. You can see if they have a shuffling gait or any other different types of movements. Obviously, that's going to help with your differential diagnose. If they have shuffling gait, we're thinking, okay, potentially more DIP related versus TD. So the movements that you see when they're walking in the office really allows you to view them from head to toe truly without them being seated, right? So if they're having any truncal movements, hip movements, abnormalities in their gait, that can give you an insight to further differential diagnose. Outside of that, if you have the patient in an office, very handy in terms of checking for rigidity, right? So muscle rigidity, movement rigidity there can play a role in your differential diagnosis between DIP and TD as well.
As a follow-up about assessment, what are best practices for using the Abnormal Involuntary Movement Scale, or AIMS, to assess for tardive dyskinesia?
The best practice in terms of what APA guidelines recommend is we do an AIMS every year for every single patient on a dopamine blocking agent, but also every potentially 6 months for those that are higher risk. So what does higher risk indicate? So if a patient is female, frail, of postmenopausal age, if they have a substance use disorder, those are all going to put them in a higher risk category to be screened twice a year rather than once a year. Other things that can cause a patient to be at higher risk would be if a patient has been on antipsychotics for a longer period of time. It's the accumulation of time that they have been on their antipsychotics, as well as how potent the D2 binding affinity is to the receptor, as well as the dosing of the medications, all of that combined is going to give you an idea of if they're at higher risk factors from a treatment standpoint. And those patients should also be screened twice a year as well. With today's technology, we're able to see patients in person, and we're also able to see patients remotely. It's kind of a hybrid model that I like to use, where if they're obviously, if you're looking for an Ames assessment, it's best to have that person come in person. But even if they can't come in person, it's nice to have a video or a telepsych video conference with help or assistance from the caregiver or someone where the patient can be seen from head to toe with assistance potentially. But definitely Ames can be done teleremotely or in person. The only thing you can't probably do is probably just checking on rigidity there. Otherwise, as long as there's somewhere there to help the patient, you can potentially do a full Ames with telepsychiatry or a video conference.
Dr. Alba, tell us about the patient-related, disease-related, or treatment-related factors that play into the choice of therapy for tardive dyskinesia.
There's a number of different things that we have to take into consideration when we look at issues related to tardive dyskinesia. The first thing that we have to take into consideration is, what are the risk factors that we encounter? And we know that there's a number of risk factors, including being a woman. Female sex is a predisposing factor. Older patients certainly are at higher risk. Non-white people tend to have more of a tendency to develop tardive dyskinesia. The presence of an affective disorder, and certainly the use of D2 blockers, traumatic brain injury, diabetes, HIV, substance use disorders, particularly stimulants, they can also predispose to a movement disorder. And of course, again, as I mentioned earlier, the use of an antipsychotic medication, and we're talking about over 3 months, or the development of the symptoms. We also can see these problems caused by lithium or an anti-Parkinsonian agent. And we have to, again, go back to the premise that not all movement disorders are tied up dyskinesia. We have, for example, another big one, which is medication-induced Parkinsonism. But when we are dealing directly with tardive dyskinesia, we have to, and it is recommended by multiple agencies, the use of VMAT2 inhibitors. Those are the only treatment modalities that should be used for the treatment of tardive dyskinesia. The other thing that we have to consider is the possibility of affective issues that occur as comorbidities to this problem, the tardive dyskinetic problem, that is. And those need to be treated as well.
Nurse Practitioner Tran, when should patients with tardive dyskinesia be referred to a specialist?
The handful of patients that I have referred over to a movement neurologist are usually patients with mixed movements, right? So you see the tardive dyskinesia, potentially you see DIP with it. Now, if the drug-induced Parkinsonian movements or Parkinson movements are caused by VMAT2 inhibitors, obviously there's a way to back down on the VMAT2 inhibitor dose to see if that resolves. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And so with dual presentation or mixed movement presentation, those are usually the ones that I do refer out to movement neurologists. Other patients that would be good candidates for referral for further assessment or evaluation is if a patient has tried one VMAT2 inhibitor and had no response, tried the other VMAT2 inhibitor on the market and also had no response. And obviously, if the differential diagnosis is still pointing at TD there, those patients would potentially be referred out if they're not responding to either treatment.
Dr. Alba, same question for you. When do you suggest that a patient with TD see a specialist?
Whenever we feel like we don't know how to handle the issue, right? But having said that, I think that it behooves us all to become better acquainted with this particular disease entity, because a number of medications, not only psychiatric medications, but a number of gastrointestinal medications, anything that actually blocks dopaminergic 2 receptors can cause this illness. Now, we have to be sufficiently trained to recognize the symptoms, which when seen are very apparent. And any physician, nurse practitioner, or physician assistant should be trained in recognizing the symptoms. Now, we should also be trained on being able to differentiate between tardive dyskinesia and medication-induced Parkinsonism, because the treatment modalities are going to be different. Having said this, I think that it is important for us to recognize our limitations. I do see a number of movement disorders, and I have become very familiar with them. But a lot of my colleagues do not. So when in doubt, get a second opinion. Now, I think that primary care doctors need to know about this disease entity as well, because they're the first line of defense to figure out what is happening with a particular patient to help improve their quality of life and their overall health. So when should a patient be referred to a specialist? Whenever we have a question, whenever we have a doubt, whenever we feel that this is beyond our scope of practice. Again, I reiterate, we need to become familiar with this disease entity because a number of our medications can cause it, or we may get a referral where we do see the movement disorder as well.